It's surprising how rambunctious we all are. Maybe that's the joy being awakened. So, we have another letter from our distant teacher, James Perez, that I will read to you tonight. Dear Seattle Sangha, once again, I get a chance to connect with you and offer my support. I'm writing from Trinidad, where Jane and I have been invited to share the Awakening Joy principles with a successful businessman who wants to bring more happiness into the world through his charitable project called Rethink. He read the book and wants to bring these practices to everyone on the island. How blessed is that? This week, the two themes are integrity and the joy of letting go. As you're probably aware, integrity or sila is the foundation for inner and outer peace. In Buddhist teachings, integrity is considered one of the most effective ways to create the conditions for joy to arise. The Buddha made a very clear connection between integrity and joy. For those who lead a virtuous life, it's a natural law that remorse will not arise. For one free of remorse, it's a natural law that gladness will arise. For one who's glad at heart, it is a natural law that joy will arise. It's in the suttas. Must be true. The happiness that comes from leading a life of integrity is known as the bliss of blamelessness. I love that, the bliss of blamelessness. It is said that other sources of happiness, such as being free of debt, having enough to provide for your loved ones, or having enough wealth to share generously with others, produces a mere fraction of the bliss of blamelessness. When we're not congruent with our values, we can't enjoy whatever good fortune we have, because living with integrity is the foundation for true happiness and inner peace. There is a place in all of us that feels off when we're not in alignment with our values. We all have a conscience that is hardwired into us. We only need to listen honestly to our inner wisdom so we can discern between right and wrong. Mindfulness helps you become more aware of your conscience, and so is a great ally in supporting your intention to be happy. However, few of us have reached sainthood. We still make mistakes. There's a price we pay as we become more conscious. We can no longer pretend we don't know any better. Sometimes as we become more aware of our unskillful habits, it's humbling to see the ways we all sort out our ideals. Waking up is a kind of purification process. A key is what the Buddha called wise remorse, forgiving ourselves when we realize that we've acted unskillfully and learning from our mistakes. Be patient with yourself as you practice this theme. The other theme this week is the joy of letting go. A natural continuation of the practice of integrity. Integrity involves a quality of restraint in which we let go of acting on impulses that might cause harm. Here we're learning that letting go is actually a direct route to freedom. Letting go is commonly referred to in Buddhist teachings as renunciation. The word can call to mind images of sacrifice or deprivation, which seem far removed from joy. But letting go leads to joy when we realize we don't have to hold on to extra baggage. We are putting down an unnecessary burden, the pain that comes from grasping onto what we think will make us happy. The secret to true letting go is learning to distinguish what we want from what we truly need. To do this, we need to quiet down enough to listen carefully to the different voices in our head. and our heart, I would add. Then we can hear whether they're coming from a feeling of lack or from a deeper, wiser, compassionate connection that truly knows what's good for us. What we're letting go of are the attachments, whether to thoughts, sense experiences, or material things that hook us and cause us to suffer. What we are really letting go of is the illusion of control in a world of change. This is the movement from the second noble truth, the cause of suffering is attachment, to the third noble truth, the end of suffering is a profound letting go. Every time you notice yourself either choosing to act with integrity or wisely letting go, don't miss it. Feel the gladness that accompanies that choice. Let yourself experience the wholesomeness of that choice in your body, your mind, and your heart. That is how you will awaken joy. Many blessings to all of you. May you be happy and share your love well. James. So let's tell, you know, actually he listens to the beginning, he listens to me reading this letter, so let's have a big thank you, James. Thank you, James. He's in Trinidad having a good time. So the first principle tonight is, I think, something that we're all aware of, and that is the role of sila and samadhi, the role of sila, or you know, just ethics in our lives, and this notion of the bliss of blamelessness. Has anyone felt the bliss of blamelessness? Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling. Yeah, to know that in a difficult situation, whatever notions that you had of what right action were, you were able to really follow that instead of maybe, you know, somehow playing along with the crowd in that moment and engaging in behavior that you were going to be remorseful in the future. So, according to our Buddhist teachings and the suttas, we can actually check into integrity or how we're acting in the moment. Personally, I know I've seen, even just recently, a lot of actions that I have that I didn't realize the depth of how unskillful they were. It's interesting, you know, when we begin to look specifically at this aspect of the path, you know, right action, right livelihood, right speech, I don't know, my experience is that it actually surprises me quite a bit when we can be really truthful about what our intention is in the moment. And that usually takes a fair amount of mindfulness to know really what our intention is in the moment. But according to, you know, this Awakening Joy course and what we're trying to cultivate, that we actually can determine our motivation by how it feels in our body. The feeling that we have while we're doing an action. We can feel whether it, you know, is a wholesome action and it's something that we can do freely without any remorse, or whether we're doing an action that has a little bit of a back and forth to it. I don't know if you guys have experienced that, but you know, it's like, should I go forward, should I go back, is this the right way to do this? Or right after that, so the second thing that we want to look at, so the first thing we want to look at is how it feels in the body. The second thing that we want to look at is the response we get from the people around us. Boy, that's a really good one. You know, whether we, you know, people feel uplifted and feel safe with us. You know, I love that notion of the precepts as offering the gift of safety to people around us. You know, when we really try to adhere to the five precepts, We offer safety, and people don't have to worry about, how reactive we're going to be in the moment or whether we're going to say something that's really hurtful. So the second thing that we want to look at to determine the skillfulness of our actions is the response from others around us. The third thing we want to look at is the feeling of either ease or remorse when you recall past actions. I'm sure all of us could reflect even just on what we did today or this week and think about things that we did that we think that we might have been able to do more skillfully. And then the fourth thing for us to reflect on is the likelihood that we will act similarly, either skillfully or unskillfully in the future through practicing that action. So these are the things that we, need to reflect on that will, in a very deep sense, if we can see that clearly, it will adjust our intentions. It will, if we are able to know the feeling of when we're acting through body, speech, or mind, as they say, if we see the response of our environment to the way that we have acted, the feeling of either, remorse or ease for what we have done, and then whether we know that we have watered seeds of skillful action or whether we've, watered the weeds growing around in there. Reflecting on these four things can be a real support for the actions we choose as we go forward. And of course, they're all, supported by our mindfulness in the moment. And I want to, just point out here that I think it's, is it next Friday night? We're going to have Sayadaw Utejaniya here. That's next Friday night, right? And he really believes that the strength of our mindfulness isn't necessarily from doing, hours and hours of concentration practice. It's really from the continuity of our mindfulness. So we might think, well, I can't really be that mindful about my intentions in the moment because I've got some really deep stuff going on. And I think that he, really begs to differ with that. That if we set an intention of trying to be skillful and trying to have a wholesome behavior and thought, word, and deed, just from the continuity of our mindfulness, we can develop the strength enough to, to get a glimpse of what the intentions are, what's motivating us in any of our behavior. So I'd like to just do a little guided sit with you. One of my favorite teachers nowadays is John McCransky. Does anybody know the work of John McCransky? He's actually a professor of Buddhist studies at Boston University, and he is also a Tibetan Buddhist Lama. And, if you Google him, he has most wonderful guided meditations that you can just download for free. And I'd just like to walk us through a guided meditation right now. So why don't we just sit, get comfortable. And this is kind of like a compassion practice. I'm sure Diane knows about John McCransky, don't you, Diane? No? He's a very big compassion teacher. And so what I want you to do is think about the most benevolent archetypal figure that you can think of. For me, as a, I really love the Buddha, so the Buddha is one of my figures. Having been raised a Catholic, I really like the image of a compassionate Jesus. It could be, the Buddha or some historical benevolent figure even present-day one like Desmond Tutu or His Holiness the Dalai Lama. But just imagine this, or it could even be a local indigenous deity that you might be in touch with. So let's just imagine this compassionate being behind you right now. Just imagine this, just this essence of compassion and love, unconditional love behind you. And he, she, they are sending you the most loving, compassionate energy that you can imagine. They're seeing every single inch of you, you know, all the cells of your whole body are getting washed in this benevolent energy. The phrases, may you be safe and protected, may you be happy and healthy, may all of your suffering be held with compassion. And the sense that they see all of our suffering and still just embrace us with their open heart and their love and compassion. Now I'd like you to recall some time in your life where you had a feeling of self-doubt, hopelessness, or despair. Maybe you were thinking something like, I'm hopeless, useless, unimprovable. Just a time where you felt so much self-doubt. Just get a sense of that feeling of self-doubt. Now I'd like you to just take a minute and imagine what it's like for someone besides you to experience that feeling. Through your own experience of self-doubt and despair, imagine what it is for another person to feel that. How does it feel in their mind, in their heart? And sitting this other person next to you, imagine that your whole being is held in absolute compassion and love by the deity behind you. They're seeing that hopelessness and uselessness and despair and just loving us amidst all of that. Just being seen clearly and being loved. Now I would like you to recall a feeling of anger, betrayal, or being hurt by someone. Just explore that feeling for a moment. Being betrayed and just given up on, being hurt deeply by someone. How does that feel in the body and in the heart? Now I'd like you to take a moment to sense what that feeling is like for someone else. What is it like for someone to experience that feeling through your own experience? You know, we can connect with others who have felt abandoned or betrayed. We know that's what that's like for someone else. And now sitting that person next to you, imagine that this deity is sending, or this compassionate being is sending absolute compassion and absolute love, and that you're being embraced in the compassionate energy from our benefactors. Every part of you and them loved. Imagine that you're accepting this loving, healing energy and that you're doing it for your friend who is suffering as well. That this compassionate energy can be shared with others who are suffering. One last one. Recall a feeling of grief at the loss of a loved one. Maybe the loss of a beloved relative or a beloved friend, or even a beloved animal, you know, one of our animal relatives. Just check into the feeling of grief and loss of a loved one. And just for a moment, take a time to sense what it's like for someone to experience that feeling through your own experience of it. How does it feel in the mind and in the body? Many other people experience feelings like this. Sense through your own feelings what they feel. And now, finally, sitting that person next to you, feel the energetic field of compassionate energy coming from your benefactor. Every part of you loved. By accepting this loving, healing energy into your own suffering feelings, imagine that you are accepting it into everyone's similar feelings. That's why I like John McCransky. He really does some beautiful meditations. So this little exercise was meant just to connect us to, you know, a feeling of interconnectedness that we can have and the benevolence that we can have for those around us as a way to motivate our sila, our skillful action, because everyone feels the suffering that we feel. You know, when we don't have the patience or the fortitude or the even the intention to be skillful in our behavior, it has an impact on the world. And we can know what that's like and be motivated by, you know, how that feels for us. I think it's an excellent source of our motivation for good intention. So as we become more aware of what intentions accompany our actions, skillful or unskillful, we can even deepen this understanding, this sense of interconnectedness. So another point about this notion of sila as an integral part of our spiritual practice is that it can be very uncomfortable sometimes. You know, it's often said that there's a point, particularly in retreat practice, but I think also, like right now, I think this series is bringing up for me just, you know, I'm becoming more and more aware of my own unwholesome behavior. You know, one of the things that has instigated that is, you know, I'm an associate professor over at the University of Washington, and I recently changed departments from the School of Public Health to the School of Social Work. Is there a lot of social workers here? Boy, you social workers are incredibly sensitive people. And, you know, it's a very positive thing. It's surprising because I think, you know, in the training of being a social worker, you learn how to give feedback, almost immediate feedback in a way that's not offensive. And, oh my gosh, People are doing that to me right and left. No, it's really excellent. You know, one thing, one of my really beloved colleagues, she took me aside and she said, you know, I think, Bonnie, that you are conflict avoidant. And sometimes because you're conflict avoidant, things sometimes build up in me because I don't, you know, maybe express myself about what I need in my environment in a way that makes sense to the people who are supposed to be giving me a certain things that I need. And then, you know, the tension will build up and I'll just kind of blurt something out without having really created the environment for, you know, that interaction to happen. Does anybody else do that? Those social workers are good, boy. They'll teach you how to do that. So, you know, so I offer this as something that I'm working with right now is to, you know, figure out a way to tell people, and then, you know, I love the right speech elements, right? To say what is true, but, you know, also to say what is useful. Because sometimes things can be very true and not necessarily useful. So to say things that are true, to figure out how to say something in a way that's useful, to say it in a timely way, you know, maybe to figure out a time that people are relaxed and have a sense of safety, and then also not to say things harshly. I think those are excellent advice. So I'm trying to just be more thoughtful to look at my environment, you know, what I need to get my job done, and a way to express to people what my needs are in a way that they're probably there's a more likelihood that they'll actually even be able to respond to that and meet those needs. So that's how I'm working with it right now, with Sila. You know, I think that we could all just continually feel really bad about things that we've done in the past. And that actually leads to the second principle for tonight, and that is letting go. So I'll tell you a story. Actually, someone told me I was very self-revealing up here, but I don't care, I'm just gonna tell you. So in 2004, I went through a divorce. I was, you know, married 17 years, and it was kind of a surprise to me. And, you know, of all people I was hanging around with at the time, I was hanging around a fair amount with my teacher, Joseph Goldstein. And, you know, everyone was pretty shocked about the breakup because we looked like we were a pretty good couple. And I remember, you know, seeing Joseph, picking him up to bring him to a retreat or something. And he said, "What happened?" And, you know, I told him the sordid story, and, you know, there were certain things that I didn't feel so great about. And the first thing he said to me, it was so amazing, was, "Guilt is an unwholesome emotion. Get over it." Wow. You know, that was so beautiful. There are two mental states, you know, those things that float across our awareness that are actually very wholesome, Hiri and Otapa. Hiri is fear of wrongdoing. When you really want to act skillfully in the moment, you want to speak with kindness, you want to be generous, you want to have some wisdom and insight to share. So Hiri is that first one, fear of wrongdoing. And then Otapa is shame of wrongdoing. But it's different than guilt. It's like remorse for having not really acted in alignment with our, you know, deepest desire to be of non-harming in the world. And when we know that we've acted not in alignment with what our values are and our aspirations for living, you know, that can be painful. But, you know, we have to let that go as well. You know, when we can, you know, when we make the intention to not harm to be helpful in our lives. And when we make the intention, you know, after we've seen some act that we've done that's not in alignment with our values, you know, we've done that work, we've extracted the wisdom out of that, and we don't need to beat ourselves up about it. And it actually, you know, if you can't forgive yourself, if I can't forgive myself, how am I ever going to be able to forgive anybody else? You know, we water the seeds of our forgiveness by first, you know, offering that to ourselves. So this principle of integrity is a purification process, and this sense of letting go is an expression of surrendering to life as it is. Surrendering to life as it is. Integrity practices healing the past. So usually integrity practice is thought of actually around the five precepts. I know I'm going back to integrity for a second, but this might be something that we want to practice actually during the week of some of our homework. You know, we know what the five core precepts are for our Buddhist practice. Those are to refrain from killing and stealing, refrain from inappropriate sexual relations, unskillful speech, and intoxicants that lead to heedlessness. But if we take it a bit deeper, we can use this practice as a way to offer honor to all life. And you know, nowadays I think we're being asked as a community, because some lives in this country are not mattering as some as others. And I think that we all, I don't know, for me anyway, I'm feeling called to kind of express my solidarity with people whose lives don't matter as much. I want to say that I actually got a note from Tara Brach yesterday asking me to kind of review a letter that she and Jack are going to read at a summer, Jack Kornfield, are going to read at a summer meeting of Western Theravadan teachers in our tradition. And it was about actually opening up to racism in our society. And I had never been so proud of our, you know, founding and leading teachers. It was really a beautiful statement. They're going to unfold this initiative for the Western Sanghas during the summer. But Tara pointed out this website to me that I'd like to point out to you. It's called whiteawake.org, you know, whiteawaka.org, White Awake. And it's actually a whole curriculum that you can do with sanghas to just open up to the inequality in our society. And through skillful means, not anger, this compassion of knowing what it's like for other people, really opening to that and figuring out a way to act. You know, those type of social changes are, you know, on the behalf of all of us. And they're going to be leading some work about this summer, but, you know, all of you might want to just take a look at that. I thought it was really some of the most beautiful anti-racist work I had ever seen. And, you know, I was so proud it's coming out of our tradition. So letting go, you know, letting go of, you know, from any identities associated with either being a perpetrator or a victim. You know, I love that sense that, you know, this tradition has us taking radical responsibility for what's happening with us. You know, we are taking radical responsibility for our own actions and agency in the world. You know, it you know, asks us to wisen up and realize that we are all responsible for our own attitude towards the world, regardless of our experience of perpetration or oppression. You know, we have to, there's no one else but us that can work with that. And, you know, we're asked to see clearly into these identities. with the purpose of letting them go and understanding our shared humanity around that. And I wanted to share with you how many of you have heard the work of Byron Katie? We love Byron Katie, right? We love her. But she also, that's what I love about our tradition, you can't sell it. They don't like to sell it very much, so a lot of it is actually available free. I was having a conflict with someone, when was it? It must have been last summer. And, just to let you guys, one of the tips about the gratitude week was actually to develop a gratitude email circle. And I realized I've actually had a gratitude email circle for the last 7 years with four other women that I was in the Community Dharma Leader Program with through that program. Five women have been communicating weekly about what they're grateful for and sharing some of the problems in their life. So I was having, problems with someone last summer, and one of my Dharma sisters, who I see maybe once every 3 years, but knows exactly what's going on with my life, I was over at IMS, and she was attending a retreat at the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies, and she brought this very sheet by Byron Katie. It's called Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet. Has anybody done this worksheet? Oh my God, don't we love it? It goes through these questions. The first question is, in this situation, time and location, who angers, confuses, or disappoints you, and why? So the statement is, I am blank emotion, angry, confused, blah, 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 with name the person, because, and then it has you put your thing. The second question is, in this situation, how do you want them to change? What do you want them to do? I want, name the person to blank. Three, in this situation, what advice would you offer to them? Name, should, shouldn't, blank. I mean, it's just a wonderful, you would think that we would all be able to do this without a script. But it is so helpful. And, Byron Katie is always asking the question, what story are we believing now? What story are we believing now? And the reason I say this is because these are the things that we need to let go. And, I want to remind us of another core teaching of the Buddha that fits into this, the teaching on the distortions of the mind, right? That actually have been taken up by some of the best organizational psychologists. Peter Senge has turned this teaching into something he calls the ladder of inference. And just briefly, how it works is we observe external data and occurrences. We select or filter which data we take in, right? We don't take in all the data. We make assumptions about our environment based on things that you know and meanings that you make out of this limited data. You draw conclusions from that data. You refine and update your beliefs about the world based on that data, and that hardens into a view. So that's distortions of perceptions, distortions of thoughts, and distortions of view. And if we're not seeing the three characteristics in our environment, if we're not seeing the unsatisfactoriness of everything that we want, and the changing nature of everything that we want, and the impersonalness of the events in our life, then our perception is distorted, because that's the truth of our reality. So that was a lot of talking. I have a lot more here about, generosity is a supportive practice for letting go. Generosity allows us to practice, giving up something that's, very precious to people. You could be generous with your time, with your money, with your patience, with your kindness. You know, there's a lot of things that we can be generous with. So boy, time sure has gone by fast. So how was this week for you? Was anybody practicing, noticing joyful things, being grateful? Any good insights or challenges you want to share with our Sangha? Yes? Excellent! She pulled out her clarinet. How was that for you?
It's pretty bad. But it makes me very happy.
There you go! She pulled out her clarinet. It was pretty bad, and that was absolutely okay. It made her happy nonetheless. Thank you. Yes? Eeyore, yeah.
So I just decided this week to try an inner piglet.
Oh, that's excellent. Did you hear that? She has an inner feeling tone that she has named Eeyore?
From Winnie the Pooh.
From Winnie the Pooh, right. And in order to counteract that, she's been trying to channel piglet as a way to address her Eeyore. I love that. Yeah? Wow.
And a woman said, I want it. She told me her story about her husband and her just had a baby. They didn't have any space for their clothes and this and that. It turned out that these people lived directly across the street from me, and their address was one before mine.
Oh, did you hear that? Yeah.
They share, they love antiques, and they're a lovely couple, and they literally walked over and carried my marijuana.
Oh. That's beautiful. Did you guys all hear that? She has an armoire. She went on to, is it a Facebook page?
It's Buy Nothing.
Buy Nothing Facebook page, where you exchange things.
Yeah.
I love that. And the people who needed it were right across the street from her with a new baby. So she actually also made friends with the neighbors. And it felt really good to help someone. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Then I got what I wanted. I wanted someone to love my furniture.
Mm.
I loved it.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. I didn't want to end up in Brazil.
Yeah. Anyone have challenges with working with the material? Anybody getting cranky? Yeah? Oh, the bliss of blamelessness? I think, so the question is how you can soak in the bliss of blamelessness without becoming self-righteous. I think, you know, when Anushka Fernandapalli was here, she said this thing that totally blew my mind about that. You know, I'm always talking, and Rodney talks about this too, about how we have two knowledge systems, right? We have our intuitive awareness is where the, you know, reality can be seen, and it's non-conceptual and it's intuitive. And we have our kind of ego, conceptual linear mind. And she said this really interesting thing. She says, even when we have this beautiful insights in our intuitive awareness, our ego wants to own it. So it's us having it all, right? I understand about, you know, impermanence, and I understand about no self, blah, 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 blah. So I think, you know, the way she characterized that, you know, and I've been actually looking for that, about how not to have our ego actually own the identity of a person who knows that. You know, it was such a great way to think about it. I think you're right that we can, our, this side, our rational, linear, grabby mind does want to be the person who knows and is virtuous and is going to tell everybody else how to do it. I think we have to be careful of that. Were you having that experience? Smugness. Right. Well, for me, it's like that's just the next thing to be aware of, right? It's like, you know, insight into impermanence arises, smugness arises, awareness of smugness arises. You know, it's just the next thing. It's greed, hatred, and delusion, you know? A moment of insight will arise and a moment of ignorance will arise. That's just how it's playing out for us. And we don't necessarily, you know what's interesting to think here though, that the defilements aren't personal and the wisdom isn't personal either. You know, that's what, you know, that's one thing we need to remember and open to. The wisdom is not personal either. Anyone else? God, this is some good stuff. This song is deep. Yes?
Well, if we go back to Byron King's worksheet.
Yes.
Because you didn't think the fourth step, which is the most important.
Thank you. Okay, the fourth step is... Oh, this is good. You're absolutely right.
You're brave.
Yeah, that's it. I was telling you I'm like that. Or this that arises. In order for you to be happy in the situation, what do you need them to think, say, feel, or do? I need, name the person to blank. Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, I was actually thinking about the turnaround. I'm wondering what the turnaround is. Because at one point, she says, okay, you want this person to do this, that, and the other, and you'll feel better. And then the turnaround is, I need to do those things.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the question is, these things that you, okay, the turnaround, turn the thought around by asking to yourself, let's say that you, a person doesn't listen to you. Oh, I could say that about my significant other sometimes. Or actually, that's me, right? I don't listen to myself about the certain things, right? About my health, about overcommitting. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you. To the other, I don't listen to him. I don't listen to my partner about certain things. Wow, I'm getting embarrassed now. To the opposite, that person doesn't listen to me about his health. So yeah, this is excellent. Thank you for pointing that out. This has got a lot of insights. Just, you know, working through some of these materials, I think, is a way to do investigation on paper. You know, deeper investigation on paper. And if you just Google Byron Katie, BYRONKATIE, and worksheets, she's got a whole bunch of them that are actually quite sweet as a way to work with some of these more hidden assumptions and motives that we have. We only have 5 minutes left. I don't want to be late. Do we have any announcements?